We are holding in Brachos, the bottom of page Nun Gimel, middle of Os Ayin Vav, the second line from the bottom of page, bottom of page 106, rather, second line from the bottom on page 106, middle of Os Ayin Vav. We're in the middle of telling the story of what happened when somebody, later on the Gemara is going to identify it was Rav Shimon ben Yochai, asked the question first to Rabbi Yeshua and then to Rabbi Gamliel, whether Tefillas Arvis Rishus, whether davening Ma'ariv is to a certain degree optional as compared to the other Tefillas. Rabbi Yeshua told him, where we said yesterday, Tosfos says, doesn't mean you can just decide, I don't feel like davening tonight. It means, for example, that you have a mitzvah, that you have some other overriding mitzvah that you can say because of that, then that takes the place of Ma'ariv instead. Anyway, so we said, Rabbi Yeshua said that yes, it is Rishus. Rabbi Gamliel said that no, and it ended up being a whole thing in the Beis Medrash where Rabbi Gamliel was seen to be too overbearing towards Rabbi Yeshua, and therefore it was decided that they're going to depose Rabbi Gamliel as Nasi and appoint somebody else. So eventually, we said yesterday, they settled on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He has all the advantages. He's a chacham, so this way nobody will be able to show him up in learning. Any question they ask him in the Beis Medrash, he'll be able to answer. He's rich, so if he needs to pay tributes or bribes or what have you to the Romans, he'll be able to. And he has Yichus, he's the 10th generation from Ezra, so even if Rabbi Gamliel is angry at him and calls down punishment on him from Shemayim, or maybe not, he may not even deliberately do that, just that Rabbi Gamliel might be so offended that Hashem would stick up on his honor, then on his behalf, to stick up for his honor, then the Schus of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's ancestors would protect him. So the Gemara says, Osru va'amri leh. So the Chachamim came to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and they asked him, Nichalei l'mayr l'mehevi reish v'sivta. Do you, Rebbe, want to be the new reish v'sivta, the new Rosh Hashiva? Amalahu, so he answers them, Ezo v'imlich ba'anshe besoy. Let me go first and consult with the members of my household, meaning my wife. So obviously on one level, you know, a man is going to do any kind of major step like that. He ought to consult with his wife. Anaf Yosef brings an interesting point over here from Abyonis and Eidoshitz and Yadis Devash. He says, we know that different types of people, depending on what kind of work they do, their owner, the scheduled time when they should be with their wife, when they should have relations, varies. You can have a person, for example, who doesn't work for a living, who lives off his investments or whatever. It's supposed to be every day. You have some people twice a week, once a week, etc. Then you have people who travel out of town, who may only be required once every few months. Anyway, usually a Talmid Chacham's time, usually his owner should be once a week, that he should be available for his wife. A Nasi, Rabbi Yonasan says, would have a much lower frequency, only once a month, because he's busy teaching Torah all the time. So now, if he's going to become Nasi, then that's going to reduce the amount of time he's available for his wife, so for owner, so therefore he has to consult with her. So, also for Imlech B'Divesu, so sure enough, he went to consult with his wife. So she asks him, the first problem is, they might fire you as well, the same way as they just deposed Rabbi Gamliel, they might end up deposing you. So he answers him, Malan Bakodesh V'loy Merid. The fact is, in Halacha, we only raise people up in Kedusha, we don't lower them. Now, this is in parenthesis, and in fact, Rashi takes this out, and Marusha explained, because, what do you mean? What kind of an answer is that? We just see they deposed Rabbi Gamliel, so obviously they didn't care about Malan Bakodesh V'loy Merid. What makes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah think that he should be any more safe against that? But then Marusha says that nevertheless, that is the old Girsa. It's in parenthesis over here because you find it in older Gemaras, and the author, the compiler of Ein Yaakov, also had it in his Gemaras. So Marusha explains, in other words, she doesn't mean they might fire you for no reason. What they mean is that what she means rather is what happens if Rabbi Gamliel ends up making up with Rabbi Yeshua. The whole thing was triggered by Rabbi Gamliel treating Rabbi Yeshua disrespectfully. What happens if they make up? And then they're going to want to reappoint him as Nasi, and then you're out. So he answers, Malan Bakodesh V'loy Meridin. He says that wouldn't be valid. That wouldn't be a valid cause for them to remove Rabbi Gamliel because, in their opinion, he did something wrong. That, yes. But to just remove one person because the other person wants to take back his job, that he's telling her, I don't have to worry about that. Anyway. She says, Doma Onishloch, what if he punishes you? What if he does, what if he does call down anger or a curse on you from Hashem? So he answers, Omar, he answers, Amri Inchi, people say, Lishtamish Inish, Yomachod, Bakosad, Mokra, it's worth it for a person to use a beautiful crystal cup for one day. Even if the next day it's going to be broken. In other words, even if this Nasius is only a temporary thing, it's still worthwhile. Now, according to Rashi's Girsa, there's not two different things she asked him. There's only one so far. She said, what happens if they fire you? What happens if they depose you? And he answers, you know what, even just to be a Nasi temporarily is a big thing. According to the original Girsa, with the parenthesis over here, it means she asked him two things. First of all, they might depose you. He answers, Malin Bakodish Volemiridin. So, and as Maharsha says, as long as they don't have a cause, as long as they don't have something that I did wrong that should be grounds to fire me, then I don't have to worry about that. Then she's saying, but what if Rabbi Gamliel, rather, calls down Kusa Nimina Shemaim? So then he's answering that, he's saying that even so, it would be worth it to be Nasi even temporarily. So Anaf Yosef points out that, so what does that mean then? So another reason why Rashi might not have liked that explanation is because then it amounts to that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying to his wife, sure, if he punishes me, sure, I might die from his peda, but it's still worth it to be Nasi for one day. But would that be a winning argument to his wife? That his wife is going to be willing to be an Amana because of that? That may be, says the reason why Rashi didn't like that, as opposed to if we just say that he's not talking about that, he's concerned that if it's not that she's concerned and he's saying, don't worry about it, that he might die, but rather that he might be deposed. Okay, so he's saying it's worth it to be the Nasi for one day and then deposed, then I'm just back to where I was before. Anyway, so one or two arguments she had so far, and he answered that. Maharsha says, now, if we say, according to the original Girsa, that she's concerned about that Rabbi Gamliel might call down anger from Hashem on him, why didn't he answer like he did before? Well, I have Sfus Avis. That's the whole reason. One of the reasons why they chose him is because he has Sfus Avis. And Maharsha says, okay, because he himself might have figured, look, Shema Yigra Machet. After all, I might not be living up to that to be worthy of that Sfus Avis. The other Chachamim may have considered Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to be worthy of that Sfus Avis, and surely he was, but a tzaddik, of course, never thinks of himself that way, and therefore he has to use a different argument. So Omer Leh, she says to him, Lesvach Chivarta, but you have no white hair. So it's not gonna look it's not gonna look right that you, a young fellow, are sitting up there and in front of everybody and douching to people who are many times your age. So Hahu Yama Bartamni Sri Shnihaba, that day Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was 18 years old. In fact, the Yerushalmi, when it tells the story, says even younger, says he was 16. Yisrachish lei nisa, all of a sudden a nest happened to him. Vahadrele tamni srei, dauti dori chivarta, he grew 18 rows of white hair in his beard. So now he looks old and distinguished, and now that problem is gone. And behind the comment, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, harein kibem shivim shana, this is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means. We had it earlier in the Masech, so we have in the Haggadah. He says, I'm like 70 years old, v'loy ben shivim shana. Not that he was literally 70 years old, because he was only 18 or 16, but that he looked the part. We talked about before when we learned that line, harein kibem shivim shana, earlier in the Masech, that we talked about the idea that he's a Gilgal, that's brought in Svarim, that he's a Gilgal of Shmuel HaNavi. So in fact, he had 52 years of what Shmuel had accomplished in the world, plus his own 18 equals 70, and the Rebbe uses this, as we see then, what a person accomplished in his previous Gilgulim comes along with him now, and therefore that's one of the answers, how it is that our Dur can bring the Shiach. What? Yeah, Baba Yom, yeah. So in Avram's case, it was his own days, but here we're saying that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had the accomplishment that he had brought from his previous Gilgul, yeah.
From
Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? So a person can be Zokin and not Baba Yom or vice versa. Yeah. I didn't see it, but interesting. Okay. Yeah, you have the flip side of it also, for example. So you have, not the flip side, but similar to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah over here, there's a Yerushalmi that tells about one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Oben Bar Kahana, I think it was, that he lived to be only 28. But when he passed away, Rabbi Yochanan said a hesped on him and said he accomplished in 28 years what most people couldn't accomplish in 100. So here we have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is 18, but he's already accomplished 70 years worth of avodah. There was a different sikh, actually, which I did see. where the Rebbe talks about the point that why is it so important that he has to dap to look like 70? Because 70, you have the 70 chachamim of the Sanhedrin, you have the shivim umasa olam. So a nasi, being the embodiment of the whole Jewish people, he has to encapsulate all that within himself, and that's represented by him being 70 or looking 70 years old, right? Yeah, the shemus, right. By the way, the Yerushalmi also has a different take on the Harei Kivem Shimushana, that it means that after all, even though usually a person in a position of leadership, it usually shortens his life. The Gemara says elsewhere, a high position tends to shorten a person's life, but here he lived to a ripe old age, 70, even though he was Nasi. Anyway, so he was appointed as Nasi. Tana, we learn in a braisa. On that day, they removed the guard who was sitting in front of the door, standing in front of the door. They gave permission to all the Talmidim, all the prospective Talmidim, to come into the Beis Medrash. Now, why was there a guard there in the first place? Because up until that point, Rav Gamliel used to announce and say, "Kol Talmid Chacham she'en toichei kevorei." Any Talmud Chacham who's inside is not like his outside. So in other words, it can't just be that on the outside he looks the part of Talmud Chacham. He has to actually have the mentality and the midas and everything of a Talmud Chacham on the inside. Al yukonis the Beis Medrash. If a person is not like that, he should not enter the Beis Medrash. Now this part is in parenthesis. Again, you don't have it in the standard Gemara, but Mishum Damrin, we say this piece actually you do find in a different Gemara in Cholin. So apparently, in Yaakov's Gersa, it was also here in the Gemara in Brachas. Mishum Damrin. So we say in Cholin, Kol Ashoin of a Talmud she'ena Hogun. If a person teaches Torah to a Talmud who's not Erlach, who has bad midas, Ki'ilu Zodek Evan LaMerkulus. It's as if he's throwing a rock at Merkulus. Now we know Merkulus was a type of Avodah Zarah that the Greeks and the Romans worshipped. The Romans mainly, whatever. The method, the particular avoid of it was throwing rocks at it. So here, Ion Yaakov points out, you have a person who doesn't know that. He looks at a Merkulous statue and he thinks it would be a good thing to throw a rock at it, to be Mavazah it. And he doesn't realize that meanwhile he's actually worshipping the Avodah Zarah in that way. The Gemara actually tells in Sanhedrin about somebody who inadvertently did that. So therefore, by the same token, you're talking about a Rebbe over here who figures, you know what, I'm going to be accomplishing a good thing by teaching this Talmud Torah, and he doesn't realize that he's making things worse. The way that Amman phrases it is that what you have to do in a case like that, when you have a prospective Talmud Chena Hogan, first work on making him an Erev Chayid, first work on his midas, then you can bring him into your Beis Medrash. And then there's details about that that the Rebbe talks about in Hilchos Talmud Torah. It really depends how bad we're talking about. In some cases, we do after all say, Hamorish of a Torah, Machzir Lamutav, the light of Torah will bring him back to good. So even if he's not completely where he should be, you can allow him to come in, and as we're going to say, as Rebbe Lozman Azariah did, and that itself will improve.
What happened that day?
So that day, now that Rabban Gamliel was deposed as Nasi and Rabban Lozman Azariah is the new Nasi, then there's a new policy. Now there's no more guard. Anybody who wants to become a Talmud of the Beis Medrash can come in. So for Rabban Lozman Azariah, Dorish, so what was Rabban Lozman Azariah thinking? Why did he change the policy? Because he doushin, as the Gemara says in some places, lo'olam yatzit odem ha-Torah of mitzvahs v'afilu shaloi l'shma, a person should always be involved in Torah and mitzvahs, even if it's shaloi l'shma, shemetoich shaloi l'shma bo'l'shma, through doing shaloi l'shma, eventually he'll come to l'shma, and there's even the explanation on Pichsidus that mitoich, within the shaloi l'shma, there's already embedded in there a l'shma, because ultimately the yid has a nefesh of a case that wants to do it for the right reasons. So therefore, Rabbi Lozman Azariah figures, and we've talked about before what Tosfos says, that there's different kinds of Shaloi L'shma. We're not talking about the kind of people who are learning Torah L'kanter in order to use it to attack other people or to cheat other people or to be, or whatever. We're talking about the kind of people, let's say, so they're learning Torah because they want to become famous and they want to be well known as a great Talmud Chacham and people should look up to them. So it's not L'shma, but it's not so bad either. You can teach them Torah and that eventually they'll come to do L'shma. Yeah, for example, the famous story in that connection from the Zohar about one time, one of the Chachamim, I think it was Reb Chiya, I don't remember, Reb Abba, I think it was actually, one time a Talmud comes to him named Yossi and wants to learn Torah. He says, I want to learn Torah in order to become rich. So Reb Abba accepts him as a Talmud. The kids are, after a while, this Yossi is bothered. I haven't seen any riches yet. And Reb Abba doesn't know what to do. How's he going to explain to her? Then shortly, not long after that, a gvir comes into the yeshiva one day. He says, I have these 12 beautiful gold cups. I want to give them to somebody who's going to learn Torah from my schus, because I'm an Amoritz and I don't know much in the way of learning, but I want to be a zvulun to somebody's Yisachar. So Rav Abba calls over this Yossi and gives him one of the cups, and there's going to be more where this comes from later. Eventually, Yossi finally learns enough that he realizes that you don't give away Torah for money. And he comes to Rav Abba one day crying and says, what was I thinking? I don't know what was I thinking? I accepted such a deal. So Rav Abba pulls back in the gvir and gives him back the cups and tells him, don't you worry, you'll have the schar anyway. And so Rav Yossi, in fact, ended up becoming a great Talmid Chacham. He's actually called Rav Yossi ben Pazi, where Paz is a type of gold. So they called him that in tribute to the fact that he first thought he's going to learn Torah for gold, and eventually he learned that the Torah itself is the greatest gold of all. Anyway, so it's the same kind of thing. Rav Elazar ben Azariah took the view. What?
Well, that's where he went out
late. Was it? Okay, I don't know. But yeah. Mamloy's had it. Okay. Interesting. So Rav Elazar ben Azariah took the same view. It doesn't matter that the people are not Tochet to Borei right now. Eventually, they'll become that way. So the Gemara says, how who Yoima, in that connection, by the way, worth also mentioning a short work involving the Alter Rebbe, where one time somebody came to him complaining about a certain chassid who is, he's looking on the outside like a chassid. He's acting the way a chassid would act, but really he's not at all where he should be in terms of avodah. So the Alter Rebbe gets a very serious, stern look on his face and says there should happen to him what the Chachamim say at the end of Mishnayos Peah. So the chassid who had brought the report got alarmed. He didn't mean that the Alter Rebbe should curse the guy or something. He just wanted the Alter Rebbe should take steps to tell the chassid next time he's in Yechidus or whatever. And the Alter Rebbe explained in that mission over there, it says, for example, that if a person pretends to be lame or blind in order to get people's sympathy and collect tzedakah, then eventually the Ebishter will arrange that sometime during his life he will tack and become lame or blind. So by the same token, then, and the Alter Rebbe says, so if this guy's pretending to be a chassid, then the Ebishter will eventually bring it about, the tack will be a chassid. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the other girsa, which is in the standard Gemara, is just Shehoyer Ram Gamliel Machris Boimer, that Ram Gamliel was announcing and saying, call Talmud Chayne Teichet Kibbara, La Yikonis the Beis HaMedrash, any Talmud Chacham who is inside is not like his outside, should not enter the Beis HaMedrash. Well, now Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah changed that policy. That day, many benches were added in the Beis Medrash, because all of a sudden you have so many more Talmidim coming, you need more places for them to sit. How many benches were added? So there's machlokas, how many benches were added? One says that 400 benches were added, and the other one says 700 benches were added. So one point is that one of the Mephoshim says there may be the distinction. Are we saying that it's only the new Talmidim benefited, or are we saying that the Talmidim who were there until now also benefited from the new ones who are coming, that they were able to learn from them also? In that sense, you could say that even more benches were added, because not only you have physically more people, but even the caliber of the learning of the ones who are already there was enhanced by the newcomers. Anyway, have a kochal shadayt to Rav Gamliel. So Rav Gamliel was feeling bad about it. Now all of a sudden he sees these hundreds and thousands of new people are coming to the Beis Medrash. Maybe Chas V'Shalom have prevented Torah from being spread among the Jewish people. Maybe he's worried. Rashi says that he might be punished Min HaShemayim for it. So they showed Rav Gamliel in a dream Min HaShemayim Chatzvi Chivori, white barrels, Demalion Kitma, that were full of ashes. Now, a barrel that's full of ashes aren't really worth much. Meaning the metaphor was meant to show him, yes, these people look white and good on the outside, they're really full of ashes, they're not very good on the inside. So in other words, he's being told you were right in keeping them out. But the Gemara says, actually, it's not so. Really, at least not all of these Talmidim were like that. Ella, he was shown this Min HaShemayim in order to make him feel better, so he shouldn't be nervous and worried that he's going to be punished by the Ebishter. But the fact is, these Talmidim did deserve to be in the Beis Medrash, like Rav Elazar ben Azariah said. Tana, so we learn in a Braisa, Adius Boy by Yom Nishnes. Masechta Adius was taught on that day. Masechta Adius is a Masechta of Mishnayos. It's miscellaneous things. It's not. Unlike pretty much every other Masechta, which sticks largely to one topic, okay, it often digresses into other topics, but basically, it's the topic that it's named for. Adius is a collection of halachas that are from all over Shas. There are different things. Many of them begin, heyed, plony ben plony, that so-and-so gave Adius in front of the Chachamim, that the halacha is such and such. In various places, in fact, the Gemara says that anything that it says in the Sechta Adius, any of those Adius that it says over there, the halacha is like them. Because since all the Chachamim were present and they all agreed to what he says, they accepted that his Adius is valid, then that means the halacha is like that. There are places actually where the Gemara calls the Masechta Bechirta, where in fact earlier in this Perek, in the Gemara, not Nein Yaakov, it calls it Bechirta, which means the chosen one, because unlike all other Masechtas, where you have some things are according to Halacha, some things not, here everything is. There's even an explanation, the Masechtas are like this, we say the Masechta is called Adius, Meloshon Adius. There's even an explanation that's really Idius, Meloshon like Idius, Beinus, Viziburis, the best quality land. Because yeah. Anyway, so it was taught on that day. Throughout Shas, whenever we say that such and such was taught or discussed, means ahu yoimahaba. It was on that day. Now, with that said, though, even though it sounds like it means literally one day, Dursar Shonim explains, discusses at some length, on various grounds, including some which we're going to see here in the continuation of the story, he says it can't really possibly have been one day. So he learns that just like you have, for example, when you have nevuas about the times of Mashiach, and he uses the expression bayoyim ahu, doesn't mean on that day per se, it means in that period. So the same way bayoyim means during that period. He claims that the whole thing lasted about 2 years. Bechlal, he explains also that now what you had is like this. He explains that during the few years before that, now we're talking, he places all these events about 15, 16, about 14, 15, 16 years after the Churban. The way he reconstructs it is that at that time, so we know at that time there was a Roman emperor by the name of Domitian, one of the sons of Vespasianus. He was a terribly mean person, even to the Romans themselves. They ended up assassinating him. But anyway, so the Chachamim were nervous to gather all together in Yavne over there, because who knows, you could start claiming that they would be gathering together in order to plot against him, and who knows what effect it could have. So therefore, for the most part, the Chachamim stayed away from the Beis Medrash for those couple of years. Now, after all these events happened, he says, now the Chachamim decided, you know what, we can't do that anymore. We're going to have to take our chances with Domitian. We have to gather together everybody once and for all and decide the halacha, as the Gemara is going to say over here, on many things that have been up in the air until now that have never been decided. Now, once and for all, we got to get them hammered out. So therefore, and especially now that all the Talmidim have come to the Beis Medrash, and now they have, people are able to give Eidos where they didn't have before, so now they're saying we have to grab the opportunity. And then the Gemara continues, V'loi hoisa halacha shos fluya v'veis ha-medrash shalei pershua. Throughout that period, there wasn't a single halacha that was in suspense in the Beis Medrash that they didn't explain it on that day. So they had, for example, you had machlokes of Rabbi Eliezer and the other Chachamim we talked about yesterday, about you had Tanu Shalach Noi, and you had other things that had been undecided. You have other machlokes that had remained undecided until that point. Now they finally hashed it all out. In particular, actually, there's interesting, at the beginning of Zvachim, there's a Mishnah over there discussing certain details of the halachas of Korbanos, where Ben Azeh says over there that Lukublani, I have the Kabbalah from the 72 Zakenim that were there on the day that they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as Nasi, that such and such. And he goes on to say the halacha. What's the point of him mentioning that all 72 of them were there? The point is, up until that point, for the couple of years before that, you didn't have all of them there. Now it was a chiddush that finally all of them have assembled for the first time in several years. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, V'atzgam gamliel le'mona atzmin v'esemedrash afilo sho'atz. Throughout that whole period, even Rabbi Gamliel, even though he had been deposed as Nasi, had been humiliated in front of everybody, he didn't hold himself back from coming to the Beis Medrash for even one moment. Tzad Kosef points out that one point is that we see from that he didn't want to perpetuate machloikas. He was most concerned with the MS. So he's gonna, if the MS of Torah is being discussed there, then he's gonna show cover to it. Eventually, we're gonna say further on how he ended up asking Rabbi Yeshua Mechila. So he's not gonna be offended by, I mean, he may have been offended in prior and personally, but he didn't show it. He's still gonna come to the Beis Medrash and just continue participating there as if he was one of the regular Chachamim or one of the regular Talmid. Of course, you think of Lahavdil, quite a contrast with then as now, various Goyish politicians and what they do when they're it shows the contrast between our Chachamim and what you have in the great in the wider world. Anyway,
they don't say Harini Machmoka and Krishna means politicians.
Well, this is also true. They don't say Harei Nimochel. This is true right now. Okay. And we know that. How do we see that Rabbi Gamliel was there even during this period of Boi Bayoim? So Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Yadayim. We had it a couple of months ago and in, at the end of the previous cycle of Ein Yaakov. Boi Bayoim Omad Bo Yehuda Ger Amoni Lefnein Bebeis Medrash. During Boi Bayoim, which we're saying is during this period, Yehuda, a Ger from Amon, came and stood in the Beis Medrash in front of the Chachamim. Omalahem, and he asked them, Ma ani love bakohol? Am I allowed to marry into the Jewish people? After all, the pasuk says that an amoidin or a ger is not allowed to. Omalah Rabbi Gamliel also at the love bakohol. So Rabbi Gamliel tells him you're also. Omalah Rabbi Yeshua mutra at the love bakohol. Rabbi Yeshua says you're allowed to. And Omalah Rabbi Gamliel. So now Rabbi Gamliel, now had this been when Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi, then he could put his foot down and say basically, I'm the Nasi, and the halacha has to, and we should vote, and then we'll decide it once and for all. Now that Rabbi Gamliel is one of the regular Chachamim, he's going to participate in the give and take just like anybody else. So he says, so Rabbi Gamliel says to him, so it's clear that an Amoni can't marry into the Jewish people. How could he say he's allowed? So Rabbi Yeshua answers him, do you think that Amon and Moav are still living in the same place as they were before? Didn't Sancheirav, the king of Ashur, already come up, which is now, we're talking 600 years or so before these events that we're talking about, and he mixed up all the nations. We know that's what he did with the Aseres HaShvatim, for example. He took them into Golos, and he brought instead people from Kusa and various other cities in Babel, and brought them into Eretz Israel, and that was his policy. Whenever he conquered a country, he would deport the people from the one place and bring them someplace else and then bring people from some other place to populate that one. The idea of it being that way, they'd be more afraid to rebel against them. People who are native to a country, they know all its ins and outs, they know all its secret passageways and whatnot, so they're more likely to be brave enough to rebel against them. If they're in a foreign country and they're not familiar with the lay of the land and everything, they're much less likely to go and rebel against them. So that was his policy. So, they're going to bring their language with them. If you have, let's say, if all of the people of the Aseres HaShvatim were taken into Golos, and instead they're replaced entirely with people from other countries, those people are going to be speaking their language, Aramaic or whatever. That's not the point. The point is, in other words, that that would be more if you had mixed up, if you had some who spoke one language and some the other. No, what we're talking about over here is just that this way, the Kusim are now living in Eretz Israel. They don't know all the strong points. They don't know all of the strategic areas that it's good to have control of and so forth. So therefore, they're less likely to go and try to rebel. Anyway, Shneimar, as the pasuk says, Yeshaya describes what happened. He describes Sancheirav boasting about what he accomplished. The Osu Gvulei Samim, Sancheirav says, I've removed the boundaries of nations, Vasi Desehem Sheisesi, and I've destroyed their futures, the Oded Kabir Yoshrim, and I brought down many inhabitants of different countries. So we see that was his policy, is to replace the people of one country with the place of another. So the Ammonim are not living in Ammon anymore. So now, when a Goy comes to be Miskayer, even though he lives in the country of Ammon, he's not necessarily from the original Ammonim. Now we say, behold the Parish, Merov a Parish. At this point, if a Goy comes to be Miskayer, he's separating himself from the rest of the Goyim, then we assume he comes from the majority. The majority of Goyim in the world are not Ammonim, therefore there should be no problem. Don't you have a Pasuk in Yirmiyah where the Navi describes the Golos of Ammon? They're actually, the Navi Yirmiyah, he's talking 100 years after Yeshaya, he's talking primarily about the times of Nochanetzer. But he says, eventually, Hashem says, afterwards, I will return the captivity of the children of Ammon. In other words, I'll restore them, they'll come back to their country. Uchbar Shavu. So don't we have to assume that already took place, that Yirmiyah lived 500 years ago? So what? The Navi Omer says in Hashem's name that I'll return the captivity of the Jewish people, of my people, Yisrael, and they haven't returned yet. So in other words, the promise was given by the Navi, and it will come true, but it hasn't necessarily happened yet. So just because there's a promise from Yirmiyah in Hashem's name that Ammon will return to their country doesn't mean it's happened yet. So, El of the Hadri, so eventually it means the Jewish people will return in Mashiach's time. Hochanami, the Hadri, the same way with Amun, doesn't mean that right now they've already returned, means sometime in the future they will. So Miyadi Tiruha Love of Call, so immediately they allow this Yehuda to intermarry into the Jewish people. There are different Mephoshim on that. First of all, there's a There's a Tosfos in Sota that discusses at some length this that we're saying, that Sanherib mixed up all the nations. Is that, in fact, the case with every single nation that he conquered? And Tosfos says, actually, not necessarily. With Mitzrayim in particular, for example, Tosfos brings from Seder Olam, that it wasn't, usually the expression is that Sancheirav, like we have in our Gemara, that Sancheirav Bilvil, he mixed up the nations. But then, when it comes to Mitzrayim, the expression in Seder Olam, which is a Medrash from the Tanoim, has the expression that Shotah, which means he overwhelmed them. So he conquered, he defeated them, but he didn't necessarily get to the point of actually deporting them and replacing them. So Mitzrayim may still be the original Mitzrayim. Similarly, Tosfos goes on to say, based on other Gemaras, that Moav actually may still be living in the original places. They may never have been deported. So here we're saying Ammon and Moav, but maybe it's only really Ammon that was mixed up and deported, and not Moav. Anyway, that's that. And then there's also in Yodayim over there, on the Foshman, in Yaakov over there in Yodayim, that discuss in some detail, so what exactly, I mean, Rabbi Gamliel knows that Rabbi Yeshua knows the Pasuk from the Torah. Why is he even mentioning it to begin with? As if, like, Rabbi Yeshua doesn't know a Pasuk in Parashas Kisetzeh. And the gist of the explanation is that, I think it's an Anaf Yosef over there, the gist of the explanation is that Rabbi Gamliel was arguing that since you have extra words in the Pasuk over there, so maybe you could douch in it that even after Ammon has been taken into Golos, nevertheless, the same rules still apply. And Rabbi Yeshua is telling him that no, based on other Pasukim, we see that not. Those extra words that you're thinking of in the Pasuk are used for some other direction. In the end, by the way, that Amman passed in the halacha, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that nowadays there's no nation taka that we have to worry about these things, even though the Torah tells us Ammonim and Moavim are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people at least the men. And Mitzriim and Edomim, you have to wait till three generations. Lamaisa, we say, Sancheirav mixed them all up, even the Mitzriim, even the Moavim, and therefore, as we say in the Gemara over here, called the Parish, Mirob Parish, any goy who comes from any of these countries, from any of these places in the world, we have no way of knowing that he's from Ammon or Mitzriim or what have you, and therefore, who is right away allowed to marry into the Jewish people.
Cute.
Well, obviously, after he's this guy, that's what we're talking about, yeah. There is an interesting thing, and I think either the Chacham Tzvi or the Yaakov Emden, I don't remember whether it's the father or the son, has a tshuva on the subject. There was a fellow from Italy who became a ger, and he was wondering, since the Chachamim always tell us that the Romans are descended from Edom, does that mean maybe that he's considered from one of the Edomim and there could be a problem? And the gist of the answer is, again, based on what the Rambam is saying, there's no problem. And the explanation is that he says that when we say that the Romans are from Edom, means like the patricians, the nobility of the Romans from 2,500 years ago. The common people of Italy come from other countries, and by now, after 2,000 years, they've been so mixed up that nobody can actually trace themselves back to the Roman patricians, and therefore there's vital no problem. Anyway, So Omer Rav Gamliel. So now Rav Gamliel says to himself, Ichu Hashta, which means now this is how it is, or another Girsa, Hoyova Hochi Habi, since that's how it is, Ezo Vafaisei Rav Yeshua. Let me go and appease Rav Yeshua. Let me go ask him Mechila. So Doris Rishonim explains, again, in keeping with what he said, that Boi Bayoim lasted a couple of years, and he says, he brings based on various other sources that it seems eventually Boi Bayoim came to an end. The 72 Chachamim all left. They didn't, most of them, you have to remember, even though this is all taking place in Yavne, most of the Chachamim and most of the Talmidim didn't live in Yavne itself. They lived in different other cities in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yeshua, we're going to say now, lived actually the Gemara the Gemara elsewhere that says that he lived in Pekin, in the north of Eretz Yisrael. So many of the other Chachamim were the same way. They would travel to Yavne when they're needed, but other than that, they'd be in their own cities learning and teaching Torah or working for a living or doing it as whatever it is that they're doing. So now the point is, in other words, eventually, so things went back to normal. Things are going back to normal. So now Rav Gamliel was saying to himself, you know what? As long as all the Chachamim were here, as long as all the 72 members of the Sanhedrin were here, we could figure eventually they're going to say to themselves, you know what? Before we wrap things up, let's give Rav Gamliel back his job. But now, as he says to himself, I see that they haven't. Everybody's gone back to their places, including Rabbi Yeshua, as we're going to say now. And still they haven't. Then I realize if I ever want my job as Nasi back, then I'm going to have to go ask Rabbi Yeshua Mechila. So when he came to Rabbi Yeshua's house, and again, we're saying Rabbi Yeshua lived in Pekin, which is the north of Eretz Yisrael. So we're talking a couple of days travel Mestama from Yavne. Rav Gamliel saw that the walls of Rabbi Yeshua's house were black from soot and from smoke. Amalei, so he says to him, based on the walls of your house, I can see that you work with charcoal. The Yerushalmi says in particular, Rabbi Yeshua's job that he did to support himself, because, you know, Talmud Chacham is not supposed to support himself from learning Torah. So his job was he would make needles. So that involves you have to have fire burning, you have to have charcoal, and you have to be able to melt the metal and shape it and whatever. So therefore that's why the walls of his house were black with soot. Amalei, so Rabbi Yeshua says to him, Oilo the Dur Sha'ata Parnasai, woe to the generation that you're its leader, but Oilo the Sfina Sha'ata Kabarnita, and woe to the ship that you're the captain of. You don't even realize that Tsar, the tremendous trouble that Talmud Chachamim are living with, what they're occupying themselves with for Parnasa, over Mehin Nizon, and even how they eat. You're finding it a chiddush. All of a sudden, you're visiting me for the first time, and all of a sudden, you discover that there are Talmud Chachamim like me who are living in poverty. So all these years, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua never had reason to mention it. It's not like he wants Zucker or anything. Now Rabbi Gamliel finds out, but Rabbi Yeshua tells him, Rabbi Gamliel, it shouldn't have taken you this long to find that out. You should have known long ago that many of the Chachamim are living in great poverty. Amalei, so Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, Na Nesimach, I've spoken too much against you. In other words, like I spoke out of turn to you. I spoke too much against you to begin with. Mecholi, please be mecholi. Says Loyashkaf, Rabbi Yeshua did not want to pay attention to Rabbi Gamliel. He's asking mechila, but that's he didn't feel that he's ready to be mecholi yet. But then Rabbi Gamliel said, I say b'shvil kvoid Abba, do it because of the covered of my father. Now my father could either mean his actual father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It could also mean the ancestor. It could also mean his ancestor, as in Hillel. The head of the line of Nasi, and that now Rabbi Gamliel is already the fifth Nasi in that line. So then right away Ephias, then right away Rabbi Yeshua is willing to be mochel him because of that. Well, Omru, so now they said, Man leizo v'lei mohu l'rabbanan. Who is going to inform the Chachamim? Now that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel have made up, now Rabbi Gamliel should get his job as Nasi back. So who's going to go and inform them?
This is
Rabbi
Yeshua said to...
This is Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel are talking among themselves, yeah. So a certain laundry man said to them, Anazilna says, I'll go. So Shalach Rabbi Yeshua Lebeis HaMedrash. So Rabbi Yeshua sent a message with this laundry man to the Beis HaMedrash. The message was, Manda Lovish Mada Yobash Mada. The one who until now has been wearing the coat, and Mada means like a fancy coat, like the kind of thing Maharsha explains, the kind of thing that kings would wear. So the one who, in modern terms, I guess, like you might say, the one who has always worn the surtuk, let's say, Yilvash Mada, he should continue to wear it. Or Mandaloy Lovish Mada, is it right that the one who has never worn that outfit, Yemel Amanda Lovish Mada, should say to the one who is wearing the outfit, Shlach Madaicha Vana Albashe, take off your fancy garment, take off your surtuk, and I'll wear it instead. So in other words, the metaphor is, given that Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi, and until now he was the one wearing the fancy coat of the Nasi, of the Nasiim, is it right that somebody else, in this case Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, should be telling him, take that off, I'm taking it over from you. So Maharsha explains, Rabbi Gamliel, we know, was descended from Malchus Beis David. He was descended from Yehuda. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Kohen. Now, the Nasius is almost like a miniature kingship. Now, we know, for example, that the Hashmonaim took over the kingship in the middle of the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they were eventually punished severely for it. Their line was completely wiped out. So now the message that Rabbi Yeshua was sending is that it's fine for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to have his position, but his position should not be the one of the Nasi where he's wearing the coat of the Nasi. It's only right that we should take that away from him and give it back to Rabbi Gamliel, who, after all, is from Malchus Beis David, and kingship and Nasius belongs to him. Well, when they got that message, they didn't know that this message was from Rabbi Yeshua. So Amaluhu Rabbi Akiva l'Rabbanan. So Rabbi Akiva says to Chacham ben Beis Medrash, Troiku Gav, close and lock the doors. We don't want the servants of Rabbi Gamliel are going to come and start harassing the Chachamim, meaning, in other words, at this point, Rabbi Akiva figured maybe he didn't know that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua had made up yet. He figured maybe Rabbi Gamliel is going to start sending people to go and harass us and try to talk us into accepting Rabbi Gamliel back as Nasi, and we're not ready to yet. So just because we got this message, who knows? Maybe Rabbi Gamliel himself sent it. So Omer Rabbi Yeshua mutav to ekum ve'ezel anolag abayu. So Rabbi Yeshua says, you know what? The best thing is let me go personally and tell them. They'll recognize me and then they'll listen to what I have to say. Also, Rabbi Yeshua torah adosha or abava. So Rabbi Yeshua came and knocked on the dosha would mean a door, bava would mean the gate. So different gersos, whether it was a door or a gate. Anyway, he knocked. But omalahu, and he says to them a similar metaphor. Maze ben maze, a kohen who sprinkles paradrama water, who is the son of a previous kohen who also sprinkled paradrama water. Yaze, it's appropriate that he should continue doing that. But she'ene loy maze v'loy ben maze. But if you have somebody who he himself has not done that, he himself is not a kohen, and his father is not a kohen. Yoimel maze ben maze. Is it right that he would tell the kohen who's the son of a kohen, me mecha me ma'ora, your water is not the kind of water that's good for part adruma. It's just like cave water, which is it's not mayim chayim. The efrecha efer mikla, and your ashes are just regular burnt ashes, not from the part adruma. In other words, how would it be right for somebody to go and say to the kohen, you don't know what you're doing. Your part adruma water and ashes is nuts. It's not. So therefore, in other words, the implication is, so Maharsha explains, now, first Rabbi Yeshua had, the first message Rabbi Yeshua had sent, the burden of that message was that the Kohen, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, should give up the Nasius in favor of Rabbi Gamliel, who deserves to wear the coat. Now he's saying the flip side, that to leave the Nasius and give it back to Rabbi Gamliel. Now he's saying the flip side, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a Kohen. The same way as you can't have Rabbi Gamliel, who's descended from Yehuda, can't go over to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and say, I want to take over your job. The same way we shouldn't have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah taking over Rabbi Gamliel's job. Each one, they had because they needed somebody, because they needed to depose Rabbi Gamliel, because of the whole story. But now Rabbi Yeshua is saying, we can't have that remain that way forever. Ultimately, Rabbi Gamliel, being from David, has to have the Nasius, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, being a Kohen, has to have his Kohuna, but not the Nasius. So, Omalei Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua Nispayasta. So Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Yeshua, so you've been appeased, you've accepted that Rabbi Gamliel asked Mechila, and now you're back on good terms with him. Well, good. Listen, did we do all of this to begin with? It was only for your covered. Tomorrow, you and I will wake up early and go to Rabbi Gamliel's door and tell him that he has his job back. The point of going early in the morning is, the Maharsha says, like the way you would go to a king. You don't wait for the king. You don't wait until I'll go sometime later in the day. If you want to see the king, you go first thing in the morning to show that you're eager to see him. The same way, we'll treat Rabbi Gamliel like the king that he should be, and we'll go first thing in the morning to him and tell him that he can have his job back. So what happened after that? We'll continue next time, Be'ez Hashem. So that's what we're going to discuss, what they do now in order, because they can't completely depose Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Malan Bekodesh Flamidid. And so we'll deal with tomorrow what they, the compromise that they did. I guess so, yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'olach Avez Cheshvin. We talked yesterday about the Mishnah in Sota that talks about all the seemingly negative things that are going to be taking place, the Ikvas Meshicha, about the Chutzpah is going to be great, and the young are going to be humiliating the elders, and so on and so forth. So the Rebbe explains that an Avodah, it means, so we said that you have the expression that a son will humiliate his father, and a daughter will be standing up against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's own household members will be his enemies. So the Avodah Hashem means that in a person's own household, if for whatever reason they were being careless and being maple in some things, because this is how it used to be and there was no choice, now the daughter goes up against her mother, Lamal Yusa, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and says, no, now it's time to actually do up the halacha and not to make compromises because times were difficult in the past, but now they're not. Now we can do the mitzvah the way it's fully supposed to be. So never mind that until now you were doing this way, really it's supposed to be this other way, up the halacha, and now we're going to start doing it the right way. And that way, eventually, the mothers and the mothers-in-law start following that as well. Continuing on halachas of mizonos, so we were talking about dough that was cooked, for example, noodles. So the same way, also, for example, you have, let's say, falafel, same kind of thing. You say mizonos and alamichya, even if you eat shir sviya. Then the Altadabra discusses details about that, but if we're talking about if it's not farfel per se, but rather actual grains, then yesh omrim that it has to be that they soften enough that the things stick together. Only then would it be considered mezonos. Otherwise, it might only be hadama. And even if the peels weren't removed and it wasn't softened and crushed like that, then it would only be hadama and bone nefashes. Yesh lochosh lachila, so only eat from a shiur of it during a suda and b'di'evad you'd say bone nefashes. That's talking about, for example, not quite farfel per se, because farfel is actually noodles, but things similar to that, maybe like couscous or something. I don't know.
Kasha
maybe would be an example. Kasha is made from buckwheat, so it's hadama anyway for sure. We're talking about something similar to kasha that would be made from grain. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.